I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. There is a new book out called How to Succeed in Anything by Really Trying. It is full of much wise common sense about how to do good things in business and in life. With over 40 years of experience advising all sorts of companies from the Fortune 500 variety to owner-managed enterprises, the book's author, Lyman McInnes, provides essential tips on networking, leadership, conflict resolution, and negotiation. This is an invaluable book. Lyman McInnes has long been a columnist and commentator in newspapers and radio in this country. He's previously authored or co-authored 12 books. He was also a senior partner at various international accounting firms. The book is published by Random House and retails for $25. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Lyman McInnes. Good morning, Mr. McInnes.
Oh, good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. There are so many profound tips, lists of advice in this book. Was there a challenge at all as the author to put this all together?
No, I can't say that there really was in terms of putting it all together. The challenge actually came in choosing what should go in the book and what should not, and also in what way to present it. What this book is all about is when I was 17 years old, as a matter of fact, Joe, I started to write down observations or anything that I experienced being around smart people, being around successful people, anything I read, anything I heard. And I had all these things in a great big binder that I called my stuff binder. So there was no challenge as far as the material went. But what the challenge was how to present it so that it's meaningful to anybody doing anything, no matter where they're doing it.
Did you still have the stuff binder?
I still have the stuff binder. Now, I guess I have to confess that it is computerized now, but I still have it. These little gems of wisdom, as I've called them, now total about, the last time I counted, Joe, there were about 2,500 altogether, and an awful lot of them are in this book.
So who did you write the book for?
I wrote it.
Yeah, who was your audience?
This is just going to sound so awful that I'm almost loath to say it, but it is the truth. It's for everybody. Anybody from a high school student right through to a retired person and everybody in between. There's something in this book for everybody. And the reason that I did that or tried to do it, only time will tell whether I've succeeded or not, is the three books that impressed me most as a young person when I was starting out and trying to learn some things were the three Dale Carnegie books: How to Win Friends and Influence People, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living, and his public speaking book. And he wrote those books for everybody. He wrote them in a way that no matter what you were doing, no matter what your goal was, there was something in that book for you that you could, to use his terminology, that you could stick in your shirt pocket and take with you. And so I've tried to do the same thing. So I'm very confident that there's something in here for everybody. I've had two really interesting reactions since the book came out. One was from a lady who got in touch with me and said that it's helped her quit smoking. And believe me, Joe, this is about as far away from an objective of this book as you could get in my mind. And so I asked her about that. I said, how come? And she said, well, it taught me that I wasn't trying hard enough to quit smoking. And the other one I had that was really interesting was a lady emailed me. I didn't follow up on this one, but she emailed me. And she said, you have done the impossible. You've gotten my sister to read a book. So if a person who normally doesn't read a book, you know, would sit down and read this right through, I think that's pretty good evidence that that I'm at least close to my goal of having something for everybody.
You mentioned the Dale Carnegie books, and those came out when? About 100 years ago?
Oh, my gosh, in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, nearly 100 years ago, and
yep.
And a lot of the stuff in there remains relevant.
It holds up today.
Yeah, what do you think it is about, I guess, it sounds general, but the sort of advice that people need, or the things that we know but we don't practice, the things that we just ignore, perhaps, because of the way our lives are.
Well, I think what Carnegie certainly achieved, and what I hope I've achieved, is really a number of things when it comes to advice. First is keep it simple. I am proud of the fact that I don't know a whole lot of big words. So there are no big words in this book. The advice doesn't have to be expressed in terms that people can't really understand without reaching for a dictionary. So keep the advice simple. The second thing is keep it practical. Things that you can actually do. Things that you can start doing or stop doing, depending on the approach, right away. Now, this is the kind of advice I've got in here. It's not something that you have to go and take a university course for. I suggest that people might want to take courses to do certain things. But the advice that's in here, and at the end of each chapter, there's a list of things to remember and a list of things to do. And every one of those things to do is something that that anybody, as I say, from a student to a retired person, from a person who is building a company to somebody that's got a staff of tens of thousands, or to a person that just wants to make a difference at the PTA, there's something in here, there are a number of things in here that they can A, understand, and B, start to use right away.
Well, let's start at the first chapter there. The title is fairly obvious, Basic Tools and Fundamental Steps. What do we need to succeed?
Well, first of all, you have to have knowledge, and you have to have skill. And there's an old saying that I'm sure everybody is familiar with, is that knowledge is power. And I make the point in the book, Joe, that I don't believe that for a minute. Knowledge is not power. It's the application of knowledge that is power. And a person can have all the knowledge in the world, but if they don't have the skills with which to apply this knowledge, then it's not going to work. So the two basic tools, as I call them, are knowledge and skill. And then there are three fundamental steps that we have to take. We decide what we want to succeed in. Well, we have to identify the knowledge and the skills that we're going to need to achieve whatever this particular success is that we're looking for. Then we have to do a realistic inventory of the level of knowledge and the number of skills that we already have. And then we have to acquire the knowledge and develop the skills that we don't have. And that, of course, means that we have to sit down and work out some kind of a reasonable plan as to how we're going to do that.
I mentioned earlier that we are, as human beings, especially in this culture, we're a certain way. And I don't know how to sort of consider ourselves as. I mean, we're sort of whiners, and we're sort of consumed by hubris a lot of times. How do we get away from that, do you think?
Well, the first step, I think, in getting away from that is to recognize that we can't wait for other people to do things for us. We can't wait for other people to make us happy. We can't wait for other people to make us successful, because it may not happen. And in the chapter on setting goals, one of the things, you know, that I say in there is that if you don't have a plan of your own, then you're going to be a part of somebody else's plan. And if you look at those whiners and those folks that have a big sense of entitlement, almost invariably, Joel, I'm sure you'd agree with me, you'll find out that they are part of somebody else's plan. They don't have their own plan. They don't have their own short-term and long-term goals. So I think step number one in overcoming that is realizing that success is personal. Success always has a context, and that context is always personal. It's something that you and I and every other individual have to look upon as being an individual achievement, success, not comparing ourselves to somebody else, not thinking that we're entitled to anything without as the book title suggests, is it really try?
The cover. I'm familiar with the musical "How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying." Was that always part of the title, or is that just the job that the publishers did in terms of making the cover?
No, that was always my title. I first ran into that back in the, I'm really old, by the way, you know, so I was familiar with How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, because I remembered the book back in the 50s, and I remembered the musical, and I remember the movie. And I always had it in the back of my mind that if I got around to writing a success book, that what I would do is I would play on that title and change it to How to Succeed in Anything by Really Trying. So that was my idea. But the publisher came up with the cover, which I think is really, really wonderful. And when people see the book, if they wonder what's going on there, it's the ant moving a rubber tree plant, you know, which of course comes from another musical from the same era.
The Sinatra song, High Hopes.
Exactly right. Yeah.
There's a chapter in the book about the pitfalls of advice. What do you think we need to be wary of?
Well, it depends on whether you're giving or receiving. So let's start first, I guess, with the receiving side. The pitfall that you have to watch out for there is to be sure that the person who's giving you advice is really qualified to give you advice in your particular circumstances. Now, for example, if the advice that somebody was seeking was, let's say they inherited $25,000 and they wanted advice as to how to invest that. Well, you don't go and ask your next door neighbor who is an investment advisor to large corporations, because he or she probably has no experience whatsoever in dealing with the $25,000 amount. So you would go down to the bank and you would seek one of the personal financial planners at your local bank branch. And just translate, you know, that example, that analogy into any kind of advice that you're having, that you want. I have a quotation in there from my father when he once said, "You shouldn't take carpentry advice from a guy with missing fingers." So that's number one. Make sure that the person whose advice you're getting knows your particular context. And I keep using that word context when I talk about success, because it's really important. If you're giving the advice, the first pitfall you have to watch out for is it advice you're being asked for? Is it help you're being asked for? Or is it just confirmation of something that somebody has already decided to do, because depending on which of those things it is, you have to be very careful what you say. But overriding both sides of this is you have to remember that circumstances can be the same, but people are never the same. So what worked in one set of circumstances may not work in another set of circumstances simply because of a difference in the person. Or there may be a difference in the circumstances as well. So you have to be sure that the advice is relevant to the context of the particular problem that's being dealt with.
You talk in the book, and I found this quite profound, about the importance of reading.
And I know what I've said in the book is a person who doesn't read is no better off than a person who can't read. And the surest way to become a more interesting person and to broaden your horizons is by reading. And the mistake that some people make is that I know many prodigious readers who make this mistake. They read a lot, but they don't broaden their horizons. What I'm suggesting in the book is at least 25% of what you read should be outside of your field of work. And I'll take that a step further and say that at least 25% of what you read should be different from anything that you would read on an ongoing basis. If you're an inveterate newspaper reader, for example, you're the kind of person who gets three newspapers every morning, well, let's take 25% of your reading time and spend that reading a novel, or spend that reading a magazine instead, or vice versa. If you're only a magazine reader, read some books, read some newspapers.
Your last book was on public speaking. There's a chapter in here about doing interviews with journalists. Why is it that we're so afraid of talking to people? That's the thing that people are most afraid of. I think it ranks there just above death, doesn't it?
It does. There have actually been surveys where people are more afraid of speaking in public than they are of of dying. It's because for some reason, I guess just because we're ordinary human beings, we think that for that 5 or 10 or 15 minutes or whatever it is that we're standing up in front of a group of people, that every single mistake that we could possibly make, we will make. And, of course, that's not really what's going to happen. I guess in the final analysis, we are afraid of looking foolish. And the fact of the matter is, the odds are overwhelming that we will not.
Have you always been a confident public speaker?
Yes. I'm able to say that. But I need to qualify it just a little bit. The reason I'm able to say that is because until I took the Dale Carnegie course, getting back to Dale Carnegie, I never did any public speaking. So before I ever had to do any public speaking, I learned from the Dale Carnegie course that if you know what you're talking about, if you are excited about it, and if you want to talk about it, then you will not fail. And so from my first speech ever, I had those three elements very firm in my mind, so that I did approach with confidence. Now, I want to throw one thing in here, Joe. It's very important. Was I nervous from day one? Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with being nervous when you're giving a speech, because all it means is that you care. As a matter of fact, the first time that I'm asked to give a talk and I'm not nervous, I'm not going to give it, because that means I no longer care.
That is so true. In this time of economic instability, what advice in this book do you think you can offer a person who's lost their job or who's looking for new work?
Well, if I may, with your permission, I'd like to expand on that a little bit.
Sure.
And I think there are probably at least half a dozen chapters in here that are very relevant in these tough economic times. The first one that I want to mention, you already brought up. And that's the chapter on advice. I mean, these days, a lot of people are looking for and giving advice. So I think that's an important chapter. There's a chapter in there on having a positive attitude. I think that's a very relevant chapter as well. And here's one that may be the most important of all, and it's a chapter in there that says, this is not the title of the chapter, but what the message is don't overreact to these circumstances by becoming a workaholic. It's not the right thing to do. And I think the chapter on networking is important these days for people. And the final chapter I'd refer them to would be the importance of managing stress. I couldn't pick one of those as the most important. For the employed person, I think the workaholic one is most important. For the person who's looking for a job, I think the networking chapter would be the most important.
There is a story in the book, and I'd like to you to tell the story. And it's in the chapter on character and the importance of character. And it's about Brian Williams. He's a friend of yours, is he?
Brian Williams is a chap that I worked with at TransCanada Pipelines back in the 50s. Yes.
And you discuss he was in an accident, a car, he hit something, or he hit another vehicle.
It was in the winter time, and Brian was driving actually to a curling rink out in Agent Court, which in those days was pretty much out in the country. It was the Tam O'Shanter Curling Club. I don't know whether many people will remember that or not. But Brian was a rookie driver. He had only his license for, a matter of weeks. And he had a car that wasn't very new. And it was a snowstorm, and it was slippery, and he slid off the road, and he smashed into the side of the car. There was nobody else around. There wasn't another soul to be seen. There wasn't another car parked on the side of the road anywhere. No houses close enough that people could be looking out the windows. And Brian Williams took a piece of paper and a pencil, and he wrote his name and his telephone number on a piece of paper, and he stuck it under the windshield wiper. And as a matter of fact, he protected it so that it wouldn't get wet. That, to me, Joe, that's character.
And it's important that we don't lose sight of that anytime, right?
Yeah, the distinction I draw in the book is that there's a difference between character and reputation. Too many people worry about their reputation when what they should be thinking about is their character. Your character is what you really are. Your reputation is what some people think you are in certain situations. And there's a heck of a difference. So work on character, worry about character, be concerned about character, and reputation will take care of itself.
Alignment, it has been a pleasure having you on. What a great book this is. Continued good luck with it.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
The book is called How to Succeed in Anything by Really Trying, $25 from Random House. Lyman McInnes on the line. I'm Joseph Plunter.